This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
This is Saturday Magazine.
We are chatting to the lovely Dan Ziffer, who has produced an amazing book with an amazing title, which I'd love to get to the bottom of, A Wunch of Bankers. Now, Dan, welcome.
Lovely to be here. Good morning, everyone.
You're doing the rounds of the publicity now that you've produced this?
It's lovely to talk to people after you spend a lot of time locked in a room writing something, so it's really nice.
Because we're Facebook friends, and I'm friends with your wife, Asha. So I've been following this, I feel like, for a little while, because it has made an appearance on social media a little bit.
So the Banking Royal Commission last year went from essentially February till November, and it was a really long court case. So it had all the hearings, most of them, the vast majority in Melbourne, up at the courthouse near the Flagstaff Gardens, where they would sit and have essentially 2 weeks of hearings on a particular topic. So something to do in finance, like superannuation or financial planning. And each of those were very different. And I think probably we didn't expect too much to occur at the start. There's been lots of inquiries into the financial services industry. There have been lots of exposés in the media of particular scandals. So we didn't really expect that much, but it did come.
So when you were attending, I'm assuming daily, did you have the book in mind, or did you suddenly thought, oh my God, there's a book here?
I'm not that smart. So no, it was about a way through the year I thought, actually, this is quite substantial here. I guess probably the different thing for me is that I've spent the last almost decade being a radio producer. So I have produced Mornings with John Fain for the past 6 or 7 years. And before that, I used to produce programs for Steve Price and Steve Vizard and Andrew Bolt and people like that.
We apologise for the radio.
There's better tech in this studio than some of the ones I've worked at.
There's a bit of a right-wing twinge going on there.
Yes, for an ABC employee, certainly.
Yeah.
And so what you do in those jobs is you become very good at knowing a little bit about everything. So,
that's,
you know, it's a great skill to have. So very good at trivia nights. But the joke always is with radio producers is that they could talk for 2 minutes about anything, but the third minute would be a bit ropey.
Okay, here's a question for you. How many wartime prime ministers did Australia have in World War II?
Multiple.
Oh, that's a great answer.
Can you name them?
No, that's the third minute problem. You know, that's so. You know.
Menzies, Fadden, Curtin, Chifley, and Ford.
It was a very long war, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, Ford, he was prime minister for, I think, 13 days.
It wasn't long.
13 days, but he got the benefits of being ex-prime minister for the next 82 years.
So you have this broad experience, but you don't really have a specific thing. So when I spent a whole year sitting in this essentially court case that was the Royal Commission, I thought I should probably do something with this. And so I have.
At what point in that year did you get to that point?
I think it was probably around the hearings in Brisbane and Darwin, which were into marginalised communities. So how farmers, people in remote and regional Australia, how the Indigenous community and people in extremely remote communities deal with banking and finance. And we heard such awful stories there about how people had been treated and about decisions that had been made that had a huge impact on people. I thought, I think there's really something here that we can... you can't get across in a two-minute news report or even a 30-centimetre newspaper report, you need to go a bit deeper.
Because I feel like we've been quite pious about our banking system here in Australia ever since the disasters of America and the banking...
Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch.
With all the different financial instruments.
Yeah, and I'm thinking...
Those instruments were used to...
Oh, your CDOs and your collateral debt obligations. And
I remember having conversations with people saying, oh, that will never happen here. We have very outstanding and a highly moral and highly policed banking. What's your response to that?
So we do have a highly regulated banking system in Australia, which is a good thing.
Just the regulator was asleep.
Well, there's a few problems with that, which we will get to. So we have four major banks. They're called the Big Four. And in descending order, they are the Commonwealth Bank, Westpac, ANZ and NAB. Now, they're huge. They are all in the top 6 or 7 listed companies in Australia. Massive and very profitable. By world standards, they make more money for their size than almost anyone. you know. Yeah. And part of that is because they are protected by what's called the Four Pillars Policy. As the banks merged and merged and merged, I think it was about Mr. Keating, when he was treasurer, they started, it's not even law, it's just a convention, that they cannot merge or take over each other.
Yeah.
So that's in some ways a good thing. It brings a stability and at least a semblance of competition to Australian banking. But the result is they're essentially, they're not just too big to fail, it's too easy not to fail. They can't take each other over. They can't be a target for that. So it takes kind of some of the sting out of competition in Australia. So they are very good banks. We have reasonable banking regulation, but we don't have the kind of competition that you see in other really similar economies. You know, we don't have the number of banks. People are paying 20% on their credit card. If you went overseas and told someone you paid 20% on your credit card, they'd think you're from the moon. Like, it is really standard to pay kind of 2% or 4% in other countries that are really similar to ours. So it's been very difficult to change banks. That is changing due to technology. But we've had essentially a very cozy banking system. That's been good for them. They make between $5 and $10 billion clear profit a year. They make huge money for their shareholders. Anyone who's listening who has superannuation, yep, you are essentially a shareholder of the bank. But that doesn't take away that they've made a lot of decisions that have put their customers last and have had really huge impact on not just specific cases where people have literally lost everything. They've lost their home, they've lost their relationship, they've lost everything. But millions of customers have been affected by the conduct that we've seen exposed at the Royal Commission, and a lot of them are going to get some money back in their bank account to compensate them.
Can I just ask you, Dan, one of the organisations that I wouldn't say covered it with glory was IOOF, otherwise known as the Independent Order of Odd Fellows.
Love the Odd Fellows. Why won't they go back to that name?
And they are a very odd group of fellows. But were you surprised? And I mean, you know, I'd spoken to Adele Ferguson about this also. You know, were you surprised at the level and the depth of what the banks were doing to people, and how wrong it was, and how they actually, you know, of course, under pressure from Commissioner Hayne and, you know, some of his counsel assisting, they fessed up. But they knew this was going on. You know, they knew that they were treating people really badly, that they were lying, that they were cheating. Yet most of us had no idea
about this. I
think
the key thing that came out in so many of the scandals of the Royal Commission is that these were decisions.
Mm.
These weren't failures or systems that were broken.
They actively made decisions.
These were active decisions. And we know that because we've read the emails, we've read the minutes from the meetings, and then we've had the testimony of people who've been presented with this and said, is this what happened? And they've said, yes. So in many cases, these are decisions, and all the banks have done this, particularly the four majors who were examined in such detail. They have made decisions that have preferenced the interests of shareholders over the interests of their customers. And it's very hard to divorce that from the fact that many of these systems were based around targets that were set by the bank for how much money they had to make or how many customers they had to convert from this system to this system. And much of that was supercharged by the bonus system they had, where their pay was incredibly contingent on reaching these targets. Now, I can't talk too much about IOOF because they're currently in court in Sydney, where they're closing the trial, where one of Australia's financial regulators, the Prudential Regulator, who essentially look at the financial stability of our system, they're called the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, APRA. They are taking the head of IOOF, the chair, the CEO, the top legal counsel, two other senior executives to court because they want to disqualify them from working in the superannuation industry. That is, they have broken the habit of 10 years. They haven't gone to court in a decade, and they are currently in court trying to get essentially the top branches of IOOF struck off.
Is that pretty unprecedented in terms of...
It is.
Yeah. And they have not gone to court for a superannuation entity in a decade. They used to... But when they had the power to do it themselves, to essentially strike people out of the industry, they did it a score of times a year. You know, so over 5 years, they did about 100 people. About a decade ago, they had to apply to the federal court to get people struck out of working in superannuation, and they've done it 3 times in a decade.
Yeah. Now, there's Hodge, who was one of the counsel at the commission, and he was asking Mr. Kelleher, and this is on the public record, asking him, did he take notes at board meetings? No. Well, and then Kelleher says, well, you know, nothing that would be of any interest. Then how can we even find out what's going on, basically? I scribble, right? And he then asks him later, was there a recognition by the board, this is the board of IOOF, that APRA, the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, that their concerns were valid? He says, yes. Hodge then says there were governance issues with respect to IOOF that needed to be addressed. Oh, no, I don't agree with that. So he asks, was there recognition at board level there were problems? No, I think there was just a desire. It's a matter of indifference.
Wow.
Like, that's, you know, and these are people being paid millions and millions of dollars in salary and bonuses and deciding about superannuation and other financial products, and he's saying the board is indifferent.
So the issue with that, IOOF manages $140 billion yes. of your money, is that they weren't concerned about what the regulator was concerned about, no. but their concern was that the regulator was concerned. So essentially, in the evidence, which is on the public record, they realised it would be easier to deal with the problem to stop the complaints rather than kind of philosophically understanding that there was a problem. So it goes to some of the attitude of that particular company, which I won't talk about too much because I don't want to get placed in jail for contempt of court. But so many times in the Banking Royal Commission, we saw decisions that were made where people were clearly not preferencing the interests of customers. A key one was in Newlis, which was NAB's superannuation trustee. Yes. So they run funds like MLC, Plum, a lot of different brand names. And what we saw there was that there was an issue. $35 million worth of fees were taken out from accounts and they weren't meant to be. And they very quickly worked out that actually we shouldn't have taken this money. But then they spent torturous months, and we went through the yes. emails, through the minutes, understandably trying to keep the money. Now, it's not theirs, and they knew that, but they spent an incredible amount of time and effort trying out lots of different things, the best of which being that, oh, the members received a service because we sent them a marketing brochure as a service to try and keep this money. So we learned a lot about the insides of these companies, and it really wasn't very pretty.
What were some of the more extraordinary personal stories that you heard during the commission?
The commission was, the reason it had so much impact was that they would take really searing personal stories and put them on the stand and then follow them up with the executive in charge. I mean, there are so many. There was the Sydney roofer who developed a gambling addiction and tried desperately to get the Commonwealth Bank to stop sending him credit card limit increases, something they would not do even though they knew and he had told them that he was a problem gambler. In fact, they wouldn't even let him cancel the card. We heard a lot of personal stories. The one that probably struck me was that late in the piece, someone who is a top lawyer, who is an ombudsman herself, she works at the Fair Work Commission, she, on a great wicket, earning a lot of money, and decided to seek financial planning advice. She went to the Financial Planner of the Year, Sam Henderson, someone who had shows on Sky News and appeared on The Project as an expert in financial planning and had a column. And his advice was so bad that had she taken it up and not got second opinion, she would have lost $500,000 in a single stroke. And this guy's the Financial Planner of the Year. Now, she took a complaint through the very weak complaint bodies that exist for financial planning, the industry bodies. And at that time, all we heard was the back and forth from Sam Henderson trying to get the complaint struck out, trying to get his name suppressed because it would affect his reputation. So, you know, this is someone who understands finance. This is someone who understands the law. They have more information and more ability than the general population to understand these issues. And yet she found herself, and very bravely on the stand, talking about her finances and how she found herself in this situation, she found herself in a really tough situation that would have cost her a lot of money.
So where does that leave the rest of us?
Exactly. That's the problem.
That's extraordinary.
That's the problem.
We're rooted.
we're not ready. Look, the good news story out of the Royal Commission, and there are many, is that there are excellent people working in financial services. The problem has been, and this is what it tried to knock out, is that there are conflicts between what they want and what you want. And the recommendations of the Royal Commission, if they are implemented, will attempt to kind of sort out those conflicts. They'll make them transparent. If you're paying for something, you'll see the fees up front before you pay it. You won't be paying it $10 a month until the end of time.
But you know, Dan, so much of the conduct was illegal, right? It was against the regulations, it was against the law, and the banks ignored it. In fact, continually breached it. So, you know, if all the recommendations are implemented, that's great. But how can we as a consumer feel comfortable that the bank is, or the financial institution, or the super fund, is actually playing a straight bat with us? Because we thought they were before, and they're sticking it up us.
Well, look, regulation is important, but regulation without enforcement is worthless. If there's no enforcement, there's no desire to follow it. So, look, we've seen from our regulators who have been chronically underfunded that they are now taking a more solid stand. They're taking more people to court. They're taking a harder line on things. But it is really difficult. We have regulators that are a third the size of similar democracies. Yeah. You know, they are very small. And as a result, we do have to take on trust a lot of what comes from our the financial companies that we deal with.
Dano's got a question, but I want to ask Ken Henry. His performance at the Royal Commission, this is a man that goes out to save wombats, but apparently was a bit miffed at being asked questions by the Royal Commissioner and Council. He's really, I wouldn't say he spat the dummy, but it was on the retaining string, wasn't it?
So Dr. Ken Henry used to run the Australian economy. He used to be the head of Treasury. And he's one of the people who steered Australia through the global financial crisis 10 years ago without going into recession. He became chair of NAB. He has a passion for wombats.
He does.
He has a passion for wombats.
He loves a good wombat.
He has done a lot of work to save Australia's wombats.
Better to be a wombat than a bank customer, apparently.
I find that ironic because wombats are known for burying their heads
in the sand, but then they eat roots and leaves.
So all of the CEOs of the big four banks and the chair of two of them had to appear in front of the Royal Commission. Ken Henry appeared in Melbourne and had what can only be described as a gobsmacking day of failing to read the room. He answered questions in a petulant and seemingly arrogant way. I remember being there because I was in the room and he was kind of talking under his breath and scoffing when he'd be asked certain questions. It was just a very poor display and certainly one of those ones where you kind of want to stop halfway and say, mate, you realise the camera's on, right? I have not covered business for a long time, and I remember standing at the front with my cameraman and my microphone waiting to ask him questions, and other journalists came out who were very experienced, and I said, that was insane, right? That was like completely insane. And they're like, oh, that was nuts. That was nuts. He's out.
Yeah, he's done.
And look, the pressure of being a witness in the box is not something I would wish on anyone. You know, you're being asked very difficult questions about things that have gone wrong. You know, you're not there to get a gold star from the teacher. You're there to explain what went wrong. And in fact, you've been there for a long time. You knew these things were going wrong. In most of the cases, they were doing their best to fix them. But here you are in the witness box of a Royal Commission years later trying to explain why you just didn't do enough.
So, Dan, what's your take on why this happened culturally? So, you know, we have a regulated industry. It didn't seem to have worked to regulate itself very well. Why did this happen? What sort of arrogance contributes to this sort of thing?
Well, I think continual success. You know, if you have an inability to fail, if you're clearing $5 to $10 billion in profit a year and always escalating, all you can do to increase that profit is to scramble for market share. And so you try and do more. They try and increase what's called the share of customer wallet. So they've got your savings account, but they want your home loan as well. And they want your credit card. And they want your insurance. And they want your car loan as well. So the banks just expanded out. Now they're retreating rapidly. in what, you know, my slogan is make banking boring again. And they're doing that. They're selling off life insurance. Most of them have gotten out of wealth management. They're getting out of car loans, home loans, boat loans. You know, they just want to keep home loans and savings accounts and credit cards.
So back to the basics of back what to basics. They initially were.
They are literally simplifying the number of products that they have. So if you walked into an ANZ branch, there's probably 400 products you could buy. They're going to get that down to about 150 or 200 because they realise that these are complex products, and the level of training that their staff require to be across all of them so that they can sell them appropriately is just too high. So they are trimming back. They are becoming more boring. That will mean they make less money, most likely. But they have had this culture where everything's been going fantastically.
Yeah.
If they fail, if there's a problem, they do something wrong, they dob themselves into the regulator, they essentially agree to fix the problem, they pay for an independent report from a firm like Deloitte or Ernst & Young, they remediate the people, they pay back the money that they've taken, and they move on.
Yeah, and they do it again.
Well, but there's no impact. You know, I mean, one of the examples I have is that ANZ sold superannuation through bank tellers. Now, bank tellers are not qualified to sell superannuation. They knew this because the chief risk officer of the bank had called the risk extreme and at a board level and had said that the selling superannuation through bank tellers risked the bank's entire banking license because they would breach it so often. But they did it. They accrued $3.6 billion, which they hold still, and they'll probably make about 10% of that as profit. They agreed with the regulator it was the wrong thing to do. They've stopped doing it. They've trained their staff in a different way. And they've paid not a fine, but an amount of money. So they accrued $3.6 billion. And what they paid is a community benefit payment from ANZ to the community to teach them about financial literacy was $1.25 million.
How much do you think can we blame this on ourselves in a way in terms of, you know, how much is enough in terms of profit for a company?
Well, I don't think you need to blame the shareholders. I think what people who are listening need to do is to take more control of their financial affairs. You know, when the bank statement comes in the mail, you really should open it.
Have a look at it.
Okay, really, I'm telling you, open it, okay? Now, even if you trust that the figures are added up correctly, and, you know, let's say they are, just see what the fees are. Just have a look. Just have a look. When you get your superannuation, do a quick internet search. Find out, is that a good return compared to, go to the largest one. Pick another random one that you've seen on the TV or heard advertising on Joy and see what their return is. See if you're getting a good return. Because these little actions have a huge impact on your finances, and your finances have a huge impact on your life. It is complicated. Most people don't get involved in mathematics beyond school. They don't like it. They're scared of it, but don't be scared of it. And if you don't understand it, find someone who does. Find someone that you trust to have a look at your financial affairs. It is worth it. I can guarantee that whatever you do for a living, you will probably make more money if you took a day off next week and examined your financial situation with someone who understands it than if you went to work.
You've inspired me, Dan, because I'm with a well-known bank, one of the top four, and, I don't know, 18 months ago, a $10 a month service fee started appearing, and I keep meaning to ring them, and I just haven't.
Ring them.
So how much money have I spent?
Well, you spent $120
so far. This mysterious $10 fee. I don't know what the hell
it's not, you know, I'm not a financial advisor, but I'm pretty financially literate. I don't pay any bank fees. I don't pay fees for my credit card. I am a bank shareholder, and that's how you get the card fee free. But, you know, one of the things, you know, there's a lot of talk about interest rates, you know, so NAB, their at-call savings account is 0.11. That's 0.11. ANZ is 0.19. What they don't tell you, and the media don't often report, is their savings account, where if you leave the money in, it's about 1.9. But there's another little thing. Most of the banks own share brokers, right? And the share brokers have cash investment accounts, which actually pay about 1.8% at call daily. But the banks don't tell you this. So, you know, everyone talks about low interest rates, and they are low interest rates. But again, the banks aren't adequately informing their customers. And you know why? Because the lower interest rate they pay you, the greater the spread is to the money that they lend out. You know, we all know what arbitrage is. If you don't look it up, But that's what the banks are doing. But they're not telling us.
Well,
they're telling people.
They're now forced to. So one of the things that happened on the 1st of July was that a new code of practice came into effect for the banks. So they have to now inform vulnerable and poor customers that there are fee-free and low-free options. Yeah. I mean, for me, as ever, if you have to write this stuff down, there's your first problem.
Yeah.
You know, if you actually have to write down that you won't charge dead people money for personal advice,
but why can't you charge dead people?
But the thing is, they've had to write this stuff down. That's the most astonishing bit. So that's your baseline.
Don't
right?
charge the dead.
That's in the new code of practice, right? Yeah. They've had to say, don't do it. Now, so many times of all the scandals exposed at the Royal Commission, anyone listening had have been helicoptered out of wherever you're listening, in the car, at home, and placed in the meeting room, explained what was going to happen. They would say, what? You're nuts, right? No. Like, because these things are really obvious when you're outside. But the culture inside, the incentives, the way that all these things roll together, well, it just happened. But an ordinary listener would say, no, clearly this is wrong.
It seems like it's such a cloistered environment to me. Like, you know, I'm not like Macca, and I'm financially illiterate, really. And I find it sounds to me like a bit of a boys' club that kind of had their own rules, and then someone's discovered that the rules weren't great and that they weren't abiding by the rules and that the game has been, you know.
No, but sorry, then they all go and work for the – a lot of them go and work for the regulators.
Right.
When they leave the banks.
Well, look, that's a separate issue, and it is true, but they make money from complexity.
Yeah.
So the harder things are, this is why, look at private health insurance, huge cost for people. But the introduction of aggregating sites and the like, where you can compare, has made a difference. Now, it's not a perfect system by far, but it has introduced competition and it's made it, a bit clearer. There's another thing that came in July is called open banking. So the banks aren't really promoting this for reasons that will come clear. But you now have control of your transaction history and all your data. So what is going to happen over the next year or so, and this has happened in the UK already, is that apps and aggregators and third-party websites are going to start popping up saying, let me have a look at your transaction history. Let me have a look at the way you spend money and the way your mortgages and how much you spend on your credit card, and I reckon I can get a better deal for you. And what will happen is if you do take up that deal, your transaction history will be in the new account.
It's like
your direct debits will be maintained.
It's like your medical history. You can actually take it with you.
Exactly. So that's called open banking. And understandably, the big banks aren't too jazzed by that, but the small banks really are.
So can I ask you, Dan, let's look forward post-Royal Commission. Do you, in your heart, believe the banks have changed? Or are they only doing what they need to do to satisfy the regulator and the political imperative?
I think it's a bit of both. They are certainly doing everything they need to do. So, for example, the Commonwealth Bank, their deputy CEO, a newly created role, is essentially just in charge of all of the recommendations of the Royal Commission and making sure they all happen. So the banks are spending billions of dollars putting in new systems and fixing things. I think they are chastened, but there's always going to be pushback. So, for example, from next year, financial planners need to have at least a bachelor-level education rather than a two-day course. There's a bit of pushback now on, like, well, do we really need to make that change? You know, so there's always going to be friction between what's good for customers and what the industry wants, because it probably makes them more money. That friction will always exist. But the Royal Commission has been very useful in opening people's eyes to saying, look, there are some bad things happening and they'll be dealt with by the regulators, in many ways by the institutions themselves. But you listening need to take more care of your own financial situation. And if you can't do it yourself, find someone who can help you.
And remember, people need to remember, this Banking Royal Commission didn't happen by accident. It happened because a number of government backbenchers and independents basically harassed the government for years, and, you know, Labor Party and the Greens, etc. It happened reluctantly.
Oh, the government very much did not want this Banking Royal Commission to occur, and only agreed to call it when essentially they were going to lose, when it was going to be forced upon them, and they decided they'd do it themselves so they could at least formulate what's called the terms of reference, the kind of rules of the road. They didn't want to do it, but I think having done it, they realised that it's probably a good thing that it happened.
Yeah, I reckon if they could turn back the clock, they'd, you know, they'd wish they could have done it a different way, because there are costs. You know, there are costs for the regulation, but there are costs to shareholders, and we're all shareholders if we have superannuation. And, you know, they make up a huge part of the market, the banks, and, you know, it's actually going to have impacts down the track on retirement policy that haven't even been factored in yet seriously. Anyway, Dan Ziffer, thank you so much. You're welcome anytime.
Well, it's lovely to speak to all of you.
A bunch of bankers.
A bunch
out
of bankers.
Now. I've downloaded it onto my Kindle straight away, of course.
And I've got the...
And I'm rushing home to relook at my entire financial...
I'll give you some advice.
But honestly, the easiest thing, if you have multiple super accounts, don't have multiple super accounts. Have one.
Yeah.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.